This episode of This Life, hashtag You Live, is courtesy of True Recovery, Hydrolite, of course, hydrolite.com/Dr. Drew, and our new sponsor, Select CBD. All right, I want to talk to you about CBD. It's everywhere, right? You hear about it all the time. It's a topic I get asked a lot about. And the bottom line on CBD, although there are way more claims than actual clinical evidence right now, many people are using it and many people are reporting great results, and that is encouraging. So I want to first define exactly what I'm talking about here. CBD, or cannabidiol, is an extract from hemp. And while you might associate it with marijuana, CBD is the non-intoxicating component of hemp. It's what's responsible, perhaps, for the calming and relaxing effects that many people experience, not the high. Now, about the products, there are a ton on the market. And putting aside the vast array of reported health benefits, it's important to be aware of what you're buying. I was recently introduced to a company called Select CBD, an Oregon-based company that focuses on high-quality ingredients and manufacturing standards, not the hype. CBD-based products are available in a wide range of formulations and flavors, each of which is clearly described so you can make an informed decision without all the promises that, well, sound too good to be true and then usually are. Like I said, the anecdotal reports of CBD are really compelling, and I'm excited to see how things develop as the science catches up with the booming industry. So if you're there and ready to try CBD, I encourage you to check out Select CBD. To learn more, go to drdrew.com/select. That's my site, of course, drdrew.com/select, S-E-L-E-C-T. And for a limited time, you can save 25% at checkout just by using the code DrDrew, D-R-D-R-E-W. Again, drdrew.com/select, 25% saving at checkout with code DrDrew. Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around. Get the Facebook Live going. Get the Instagram Live going. And watch or see or hear another episode of This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob.
How are you?
I'm good now. Good. This, you know, I'm feeling 100% better.
All right. Well, we have the distinct pleasure to bring a friend to the program, Jenny Ketchum, who... I don't even know how to describe you anymore, Jenny.
It's the most amazing of the celebrity rehab people. It's the most, it's the furthest distance from where she was to where she is now, by far. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying.
So, you know, I don't know if you want to talk about where you were, Jenny, but we can talk about where you are.
And how you got where you are.
It is the furthest journey of any of the 50 people that were
well,
on there.
It's a great example of what I call full recovery. There's people that don't do a behavior or use a drug that they're trying to stop using that they have trouble stopping, and there are people that transform and become something that they didn't know they could be or had never contemplated being. Their full self emerged in the process of recovery, and they fully recover, and that is Jenny Ketchum.
But it's a long, boring journey, too, and most people don't want to sign up for that.
Well,
she had to go to school for fucking
years. Most people
are
afraid of it, Jenny. Well, let's her talk.
Yeah. Okay. So, hey, guys.
Hey.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I think that one of my strongest points and one of the greatest challenges that I have had to overcome is that whatever I do it all the way. And so whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, I will follow that thing through to the end. And it just so happens that the idea that was sparked all those years ago was actually a pretty good fucking idea. So where it started, when I was 18, I got into the adult business. It was a slow entry process, just nude modeling here, some solo video stuff there. And then over the course of 8 years, I grew into the business. I mean, I think just like any sort of addiction, you know, you build a tolerance for it and your distress tolerance for what it is you're doing goes up. And so, you know, I became more okay with doing things that I wasn't okay with when I first entered the business. Like when I first entered the business, I said, oh, I'd never do girl, girl. And then the next thing I did was girl, girl videos. And then I said, I'll never do boy, girl. And then I did boy, girl videos. And I'll never do, you know, group scenes. And then so sure enough, you know, I worked my way fully in. And by the time I signed up for one of your shows, Dr. Drew, that sex rehab, I wasn't in a place where I could even take the idea of rehab seriously. And I was totally using it as a jumping point for my porn career. And then
you came in to screw with us, as I recall. You had toothpaste to put pictures on the wall and stuff, remember?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I brought a suitcase full of dildos and Henry Miller books that were confiscated from me, which, you know, did speak volumes about the, what was her name? The woman who got kicked off because Carrie Ann went ape shit. I forget her name. Anyway,
who was the original therapist on Sex Rehab? And then Shelley replaced her. Who was it?
Not the therapist. God. She was one of the
staff.
The staff. Yeah.
Was it Jenna Menace?
No. Somebody we. Oh my gosh, I forgot about that piece.
Yeah. You let Carrie Ann blow up the treatment team.
I forget her name. She was lovely.
She was lovely.
Yeah, but she
totally knew who Henry Miller was.
Yeah.
Was like, well, there okay. you go. That's something. Yeah.
You've seen me.
But that was another part of, now we're going on this journey about celebrity rehab and sex rehab, is that would have never happened in real life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Carrie Ann would just be fucking gone. And the staff member would have been backed up.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, the staff member laid hands on. That's what the problem was.
That's happened before?
No. No. You can't do it. Well, it also was on camera, laid hands on, too.
Jenny's a treatment professional now. She knows hands.
But it was not a he said, she said. Here it is, we're looking at it, and now we have to do something. And I forgot about all that. Yes. So keep going, Jenny. Yeah. So you brought all the stuff in.
So went through sex rehab, and your staff and your treatment team were the first to call me Jenny in a public setting in 8 years, and it was so disorienting that a lot of the walls that I had built up around me started to crumble and started to take rehab seriously, and ended up in sober house and left the adult business and got a real, it was a great job. I got a job as a hostess at a restaurant, and I started going back to school. And
when you went back to school originally, did you have a goal in mind? Was that the beginning of this I do it all the way stuff?
Yeah, it really was the beginning of this I do it all the way. I think it was actually, VH1 paid for, I think it was 3 months of aftercare of therapy with Drew, with Jill Vermeer, and then with Dr. Reef Kareem over at the control center in Beverly Hills. And so I went to 3 months of that knowing that it was covered. And then I just kept showing up to both of those appointments, and they just kept seeing me. So they actually saw me for free for, I want to say, about 3 years following.
Wow.
That's great.
Following the treatment.
That doesn't
and it was
all the time either. There's no, a non-reality
that's
thing.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, and that really for me was transformative, because I had it in my head, like, look, if these people are going to see me for free, they could make incredible money and use of their time seeing somebody who's paying them. See, I'm going to do whatever they say.
But she had to realize that. And we're talking about millennials. Are you a millennial?
No.
Right on the cusp. So 83.
So we were talking in a prior episode about millennials. They just don't have that understanding that this person is seeing me for free. They could be charging somebody $200 an hour. They're investing in me. They don't see it like that. They see it like, oh, you know, I deserve it or whatever. Right. Or they're doing me a favor. That you recognize what those people were doing for you is amazing. Mm-hmm. That's what separates the Jenny Ketchums from the rest of the world.
And the willingness. Again, she was invested in herself as much as they were.
Yeah.
Which is remarkable.
I was. And I think there was something that happened. So when I left rehab, I posted on my blog, Becoming Jenny, that I was leaving porn and that I was done. And I made this really public statement. And for me, when I commit to things publicly, I really saw the people that participated in that blog as people who would hold me accountable to this, and people who were cheering me on. And so it didn't happen in a vacuum. And so there was this component where I recognized the treatment I was getting for free was invaluable and would be wasted if I didn't take their suggestions. And then I had this community of people who were holding me accountable and cheering me on and helping me to see light in the darkest of hours. And so I followed through.
Well, but to be fair, again, it's connection. It's other people. It's relationships.
It's also recognizing that. I'll give you an example. nobody trusted me at all. And I remember I was working at
an early recovery
in life for like 10 years, basically.
Reasonably
but,
so. Bob.
But
yeah.
But when I was working at Millie's after about 2 months, I became the morning opener. I remember Patty Pack, the owner, giving me my copy of the keys to Millie's. And I was
big
like,
deal.
This is a big fucking deal. I can't blow this. This is so cool of her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is what millennials don't have, that recognition. How do we help them understand how important those small things are?
Yeah, I know.
And that there's a responsibility to that, which is what you're describing, Jenny. Like, my first thought was, oh, now I can steal the petty cash. That was not my first thought. My first thought was, because I was like 3 months sober, I was like, this is, and it's also a carrot. Like, I could be treated like this by everybody if I just stay on this track, right?
Yeah.
With respect, self-respect.
Bob, I can so identify with that, because when I started writing on Becoming Jenny and people started taking me seriously for the thoughts that I had and the wisdom and experience that I shared, and not necessarily for the bodily parts that I shared or the images of myself that I shared, it really was a cognitive shift in the way that I was able to view myself and the interactions that were possible to me in the world.
Because you were talking about what is possible, practically seeing what's possible by doing step one, step two, step three.
Right. They don't see those roads.
And so,
Jenny, would you say, sort of looking back now at your own treatment, was it more sort of CBT-esque treatment you were getting or emotionally focused therapy? How would you describe the techniques that they were using that worked for you?
Yeah, for sure. So with Jill, I think the primary therapeutic modality that she was using was psychodynamic, which makes sense because at the time I really needed somebody to help me remodel the way that I experienced and existed in relationships.
Right.
And
right. So I bore witness to some of that. I remember when you did your timeline and things that kind of presence of people taking you through that was really novel for you, I think.
It really was. Yeah. And, you know, given that we imprint on big ducks and some of my imprinting was not great.
You want to talk Jill about that real quick? Some of the stuff that had happened to you again, we've talked about it before, so you can sort of shorthand it if you want. But
yeah. At nine, my dad overdosed and I ended up having to call the ambulance and they came in and picked him up. And then, that was one blip. And then, you know, I lost my virginity at 12, to an older boy. And that was another blip that really sort of laid the foundation for what my value in life was.
So what did Jill help you understand about those two events?
But there were a number of other events, including,
Events that a lot of kids are having these days.
I understand, including your mom. I remember the image of you, you know, standing in the window taking care of your brother, I think, and longing for your mom to show up, and your dad freaking out a few times and becoming violent. I remember that. And there was a lot of stuff. But when
you get into the dramatic, that's where you lose people, where they say, oh, that hasn't happened to me.
No, but I understand. But what's
losing your virginity at 12 and your dad overdosing when you're a child, that's happening to millions of children.
It's true. But what's interesting to me about Jenny is I never had the feeling that you needed trauma therapy, though you might have benefited from that. I wasn't thinking, this is PTSD. You really were pretty resilient way.
She needs to develop a right side of her brain, though. Yeah, that's all left brain.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
One thing that you were – having Jenny there, which people don't understand, was because of the reputation of you. It was like having another counselor there. When you're dealing with Tom Sizemore and people like that, Jenny was this solid person within the group that you could depend on.
True, but she hadn't fully looked at her drug addiction yet either.
No.
Totally.
But you know what I'm saying. There's just crazy. You know, we had a lot of crazy people on Celebrity Rehab, so it was hard for me to find my helpers within the community. She was that.
I get you.
There's there's a thing called being naturally therapeutic, or I call it knowing what's up.
Yeah.
You knew what was up when everyone else in the house didn't, including the house manager. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, and at the same time, I recognized that that it was a serious process, but I don't know that I understood the depth to which I may. So for example, like I don't, like you said, PTSD, right? Like I don't think I developed.
No,
PTSD.
I don't think you did either. No.
No, I think I was really, really lucky.
Yep.
And super resilient in that way, because there have been numerous occasions that could have been caused for, you know, for developing.
But
right.
Let's get,
and,
but
and,
so
and
let's
you were
get
doing,
into that.
You were
though.
Doing traumatic reenactments too, you know, and that can.
Oh,
you know,
over and over.
But,
yeah.
But nobody comes out of a childhood unscathed. So yours is left brain, don't know how to feel loved, don't know how to attach and detach.
Yeah.
Those things are just as difficult to learn, especially when you're 35 years old. Those things are fucking hard to learn.
Yep.
Knowing that you suffer anxiety whenever a male is alone with you, that's pretty practical. You know what I mean? The stuff that people like Jenny or myself or Shelley suffer from when we're all left brain controlled, no emotion, what you're describing is like you're acting like it's healthy. It's not, Drew. It takes decades to get over.
Oh, I'm not saying it's healthy. I'm just saying that I was surprised she didn't have PTSD given all she went through.
Yeah.
And the traumatic reenactments she engaged in. But she didn't. I didn't really. Usually with Jenny's history, I'd be thinking, oh, God.
Shelly doesn't have it either. I don't have it.
Shelly's got a bit of it.
Drug addicts just go left brain. Fuck, you know what I mean? Everything is quid pro quo.
Well, it's dissociation. Do you think you were dissociated?
100%.
Yeah, you're dissociated from all that.
But your main hurdle, you've described in other podcasts with us, is this man in your life, to feel loved, feel appreciated, to feel real intimacy.
So
that's almost impossible for people like us.
All right, so, and that's the, I'll remind people.
Oh, she laughed.
No, I know, because because there's a piece of her story you don't know, is that in the middle of one of her scenes once, a guy said, I love you.
Yeah,
flipped her out.
Yeah, that was really, really problematic. Because, again, that dissociative piece, that ability to compartmentalize my emotional needing self to the degree where it didn't have to be present at all in order for this like logical, rational brain to function. I need this and I need this and I need this in order to survive. And then when this idea of love was presented and tied to this physical intimacy that I did professionally, like I was professionally physically intimate with people, and then to introduce the idea that there was more behind that, or that there could have been more behind it.
What'd you do, punch him?
Oh, I started crying.
Oh, wow.
I like started crying on camera, and then I had to like leave the scene because it was a sock to the gut is what it was. And so it definitely wasn't PTSD, but there was such solid boundaries around, like there was no porousness to me at all. Yeah. It was just, this is how I operate. This is the face you're going to see. There was no authenticity, right? And so once I started to go through the rehab process, and once I stopped using drugs, and once all my emotions started to turn back on, once I stopped selling sex, I mean, that was another huge component in terms of turning my emotions back on. And once those started to turn back on, the whole world started to shift, and I realized how much more I could be in this world.
But I believe that out there in this opiate crisis, right? So there are estimated 2 million kids like us that their parents OD'd in front of them. Their parents are dead. They were had sex with a local boy that when they were 12 and they were 15 or something. There are millions of kids coming up right now into their adulthood that have our stories. And I believe a lot of them are just left brain, non-emotional, no love. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't think the therapeutic community really understands how to deal with people like you and me, Jenny. I don't think they do.
Oh, I disagree.
The love addiction community does. But the standard, when you're going with your drug addict to drug treatment, I don't think they understand the right brain, left brain.
Well, I would argue you have to have a lot of treatment yourself in order to understand it. You have to
I think one of the treatments
social
that
workers
can
don't.
Speak to that is DBT. I think Marsha Linehan really developed some wildly useful stuff for people who have been in really invalidating environments, and and this idea. So she has this principle of wise mind, right? So people who are going through the DBT process normally are operating either just on this like logical, rational mind 100% of the time, or this overly emotional 100% of the time operating in emotion. And this idea of wise mind is to bridge these two together and to really bring a more integrated perspective of the world. And I think what you're getting at, Bob, and perhaps it's related to the drug addiction of parents, perhaps it's related to parents being gone or abandoning kids, whether it's emotional or actually abandoning them, is really this idea of growing up in invalidating environments and not feeling seen or heard and doing what you need to do to either rationalize that or operating on this emotional side where you're putting out so much that it's like, look at me, see me, hear me, acknowledge I exist. Mm,
that's interesting.
And then social media would be the place they would do that.
Correct. Right. But Jenny, so Jenny starts going to school and then you have a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I started going back to school to get my bachelor's in psychology. And then I met this really lovely man and our relationship developed unlike any relationship I've ever had. We didn't have sex right away. We talked on the phone and got to know each other. It was all very organic. And this is before the days of swiping right or left. I don't even know how I would operate in that kind of world. But I, you know, we started to build a life together and, you know, fortunately he had his own past. And we both decided when we got together that we were going to show up and try and be completely honest and gentle with one another and not ruin each other's lives like we had other ex-boyfriends and girlfriends. So, and now we're married and we have a baby and she has started standing and saying, "All done." And it blows my fucking mind.
All done.
All done.
One of the things that people experience when they start having kids, they look at their kids and they go, how the fuck did my parents, what were they thinking? You can have all kinds of weird reactions to, sometimes you feel forgiveness. Sometimes you feel an understanding. Sometimes you feel like, Jesus, I know I'm now really pissed.
I don't know how they did it. I think I was raised collaboratively because there's no way it was just one person dealing with me. No way.
Yeah. That's what it sounds like. Right? It sounds like that's what happened.
It was a collaboration, but here's one that Sydney's 2.5 now, my daughter. Here's her thing.
So cute, by the way.
Her thing is this, Jenny. No, not that. And she'll just put her hand up like, no, not that. Like whether it's food or medicine or she's been sick and she's had to take this horrible medicine. And then I fake take it and she knows you're faking it.
Ooh,
and she
Jesus
grabs the thing like, you faking it.
At least she understands that. That's an important concept.
Really?
It really is.
Yeah, faking taking medicine?
That your mind works independently of hers and that you could deceive.
You could trick her.
You could deceive. Yeah,
what age do they discover that?
Some don't ever discover that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I was 26, but I was like, my parents are fallible. Like, oh my God.
Yeah. You know what? It suggests that your wife is deep. Properly attuned is what that all means.
Oh, really?
And that if she's reflecting back on a regular
Chrissy's
basis.
Well, Chrissy's the type that will really take it just to show that I took it.
I'm not sure that's good.
That's a different process.
That's a different issue.
So, clinically interesting information.
Yeah, isn't
right.
it?
Right. So I'm wondering. So
I'm going to take a little bit of antibiotic. It's not going to kill you.
So as you've gone through this, well, that's true. As you've gone through this transformation and your training and stuff, have there been certain stages you've gone through of sort of insight and understanding, or has it all been just more, you got it, and now it's how can I apply it for other people?
No, it really has been this sort of stage a stage theory of my own development. And, you know, I think probably a lot of people experience this in med school, right? Where you're learning about these diseases and you're like, oh shit, I have that. I have that. And
yes.
Of course you don't. Right.
Yes.
I think there's actually a term for it.
It's called medical student syndrome.
Well, perfect. So yeah. is a great term for it.
Side B syndrome.
Well, anybody in mental health starts to look at the personality profiles and go, well, that's me. I've got that personality problem.
So, no, I'm a narcissist. I project it on everyone around me.
Oh, Bob. That's funny. Aww.
You've done that too, Jenny. Everybody does it.
No, I
went through this period where everyone I met was a borderline.
Well, that could be true, though.
Yeah.
These days.
Especially around the hospital.
Yeah, around the hospital and stuff. We had a lot of that stuff.
Yep, exactly.
So tell me about the stages.
Yeah, so I think, you know, in my undergrad, I could see addiction stuff because I learned about that. And so that was temporarily, it was an appropriate sort of developmental thing because I was early in sobriety and I was figuring out what it meant to be addicted to something and like physiologically what was going on in my head. And I think that's the point in my life where I really started to become baffled by the fact that I wasn't more cognitively fucked up from all of the things I had done. The plasticity of our brains, not brain damage, that's just genetics.
That's just genetics, right?
Well, something about being an addict has it that you can tolerate what you do, because otherwise
it's amazing.
Yeah, no, but some are less tolerant than others.
Yeah, it's true. But generally, the genetics of addiction carries with it the possibility of surviving the exposure.
And which makes sense. I survived.
Yeah. Which makes it sense. And I happen to have, I don't know if I've ever told you my personal theory, Bob knows it, which is that it's a genetic expression of survival in extremis. In other words, when you look at populations that go over, that are isolated and then go through repeated genocidal military assaults, the addicts survive. The addicts survive generation after generation. So it's sort of a survivor gene. Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, I would very much categorize myself as a survivor, and that might be linked to why I didn't develop PTSD after some of the things that I had been through.
Yeah. It might be, I've sometimes thought, maybe your mom was just good enough to you know, give you something that you could hang on to that helped you, a lifeline that helped you not develop this stuff.
Yeah, I would get behind that 100%. Yeah. I mean, listen, like she was not this horrible beast. She was an alcoholic. She had narcissistic tendencies, and sort of as long as I reflected back to her, the things that made her feel good about herself, we were fine. And it didn't, I didn't understand until I started studying psychology and going through my graduate program, the kind of impact that has on somebody and what it means to not reflect back whatever.
But society was healthier 20 years. How old are you? 34?
35.
So society was healthier 20 years ago, too. So
maybe, yeah.
So I really believe it was.
Yeah. They helped keep them glued together.
Bit, your mom was doing a little bit of the right thing. The school was better and more equipped and healthier. I think society was healthier. So even if we were coming from a basket case father and a marginally ill mother, somehow enough goodness will filter through. And now we don't have any of that. Our society is sicker than our families, I think.
Or at least as.
Yeah.
But Jenny, it's a couple things. I went through the same thing with that kind of mother, except she became extremely punitive during sort of rapprochement. And my sense was your mom allowed you to move in and out. In fact, maybe too much, but she supported that.
So do your own thing.
So you at least had the capacity.
Do your own thing?
Well, she could be autonomous. She could move away and not be. Mom wouldn't try to destroy her. Yeah, when she'd move out, she just needed her to come back and tell her how good a mom she is.
Yeah, so easy to do via text. You can do that via text.
And then tell the story about you reconnecting with your dad.
Yeah. I mean, this was 2007 Christmas. My paternal grandfather died, and I went down to visit him when he was in hospice. And I hadn't been speaking to my father, and I hadn't been speaking with my dad. I was 24. I was 24, going on 25. And I hadn't been speaking to my father since I was 13. Here and there, asking for money and other addict-y type of things, but hadn't been speaking to my dad. And so I went to see my paternal grandfather in hospice, and he said, you know, one of my dying wishes is that you reconnect with your dad. And you know, like
said that right outright like that.
Yeah, yeah. So the Ketchum side of my family
they
is
are
just
no bullshit. This family,
yeah. No bullshit. Yep, it's true. And so that's actually something that is serving me well as a practitioner.
What's the ethnicity of that of Jack Ketchum?
So we're Germanic. We're just like Euro white
German hordes.
Gypsies.
She's a
German hordes.
No, not whores. Hordes.
You hear what you want to hear.
H O A R D E S.
You got to watch what you're saying, Drew, around Jenny.
Hordes. Or maybe more the Bavarian end of Germany is where all the alcoholics are. So.
So it took another year, but so the beginning of 2009. I reached out to my dad on New Year's Day and said, you know, I want to have a relationship with you and I don't know what that looks like or how to do that. And he said, well, you just call me back. And so that's how that started.
Jenny, I'm going to interrupt. We're going to take a little break because there's more of the story.
Pick up with that.
We'll be right back.
Well, if you're dealing with addiction, finding treatment is difficult. It's hard to navigate what's out there. The truth is every patient's needs are different and constantly evolving. I've had the pleasure of vetting True Recovery in Orange County. They realized, of course, that effective care can't be one size fits all because they're reputable and they care about their patients. So, of course, they're going to be highly individualized. They have developed a comprehensive range of treatments that can address all the facets of drug and alcohol addiction. And True Recovery's master-level clinicians maintain small caseloads, allowing them to truly personalize their care and get involved on a connected level, which is what the key to recovery is. They offer individualized treatment plans from residential to outpatient. And again, always with the holistic approach and focus on accountability. Mm-hmm. As patients become ready, True Recovery offers assistance with life and coping skills, school and vocational coordination, as well as community reintegration support. We hear this all the time where people get recovery but then don't know how to live. They don't know how to get out into the world. Well, True Recovery helps with that. I've spoken with True Recovery's medical director and was impressed with their range of therapeutic modalities and psychiatric services. This experienced team is well equipped to manage patients at all levels. To request information on how True Recovery can provide you with your personalized care or for that of one of your family members, go to drdrew.com/true, T-R-U-E. That is drdrew.com/true, T-R-U-E. Well, it's hard to believe a year has passed since one of the worst cold and flu seasons on record, but here we are again. So if you happen to catch a bug, the one thing every doctor will tell you is stay hydrated. Proper hydration eases a lot of the symptoms of many of these viral illnesses, and sports drinks, water alone, is not the issue. You need to be aggressive. You need something like Hydrolyte, full fluid replacement. Hydrolyte is this oral rehydration product you've heard me talking about. It's better than anything out there. It delivers the right balance of sodium, glucose, and water, providing up to four times the electrolytes sports drinks can offer, all with 75% less sugar. So think about that. It's like taking an IV by mouth. But my favorite thing is the convenience. I'm always on the run, so I use the effervescent tablets. You just drop them in a water bottle or even a glass of water. I literally never leave home without them. No one in my family does, for that matter. And because Hydrolyte is appropriate for all ages, it's perfect for the little snowman amongst you when they come home from the school, perhaps sniffling. Hydrolyte comes in great flavors, orange, berry, and lemonade, available in a pre-mixed drink, a powder, or, like I said, those fizzy tablets. I love those. They go everywhere. Come in a little tube. Every package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. Order your supply today at hydrolyte.com/drdrew. For a limited time, you can save 30%. We use the code at checkout, drdrew18. That's Dr. Drew 18. So either click through on our banner at drdrew.com or go to hydrolyte.com/drdrew. And then use that code, Dr. Drew 18.
And we're back.
We are back.
Yeah, we're back. And Jenny,
So all your dad wanted you to do was call him back. How long did it take you till you did?
I called him back, I think, 2 weeks later.
It's not too bad.
So, yeah, not
Did
not
you think
too
about
bad.
It a lot? Like, did you go back and forth, like, fuck him, I'm not calling him back, or I don't have time, or I need the right state of mind to call him back? Because I think I've gone through that. A lot of my friends have gone through it. When you have this broken relationship with a parent, you just place too much emphasis on how to do it right rather than just call him and listen. You know, my therapist said, call her and listen. And my mom can talk, so that's about it. You know what I mean?
It's funny. I hadn't considered the inside out issue. But I think I had been concerned about being in the right mood state to call him back, or having the right thing to say when I did call him back, because I was still in porn at that time. And that's not really a profession that most dads want, for most parents, I would assume, want for their kids. But so that was complicated. But so I called him back and I kept calling him. And then so that was beginning of 2009. And then April. So March is when I started talking to your team, Drew, about doing sex rehab. Mm. And I told my dad about it. And he was like, okay, so you're going to go on a rehab show and it's going to be good for your career in porn. Dad, just follow along here. Let me tell you how this is going to break down. He goes, okay, Jen, we'll touch in after rehab. How's that sound? And I said, that sounds great. He goes, you can call me while you're in there too, if you want. If it's collect, that's fine. I'll pick up. I'm like, okay, Dad.
And, was part of the fallout in your relationship with him? Mm-hmm. Was it he let you down as a kid, and now what was the relationship like when you went into porn? Did he know right away you were doing it, or he didn't know? You kept it a secret.
Well, so I think that's two different things, right? So the fallout with him, I think, was influenced in part by his behavior during the divorce, but also by my mom's stuff. My mom, and I don't know how much I've disclosed this, but my mom did a lot of work to convince us that my dad was a scary and bad guy.
A lot of moms are doing that. Drew.
Yeah. Well, but then she reinforced that one scary memory where you lost it on the car. Remember?
Yep. Yep. And so, she would do things like tell me and my siblings that my dad was trying to kidnap us, make sure you lock the doors. And, and then when we moved to a different
town. So Jenny, you've heard this in private practice. I hear this more than 10 times where, and I'll give you the example. I don't know. Were you on with Jason Davis?
No.
So Jason Davis tells us his dad's a monster. He kidnapped him. He stabbed his mother. He did all these horrible things. I meet the dad and he's like, no. And you could just feel this genteelness from this dad.
Yeah.
So everything he was telling us, it turns out, was filtered through the mother and the grandfather and all that. And remember?
False memories.
It was crazy.
False memories exist.
And
false memories are real.
Huh?
False memories exist. There's such a thing as a false memory syndrome. There is.
Right. And so so did you ever have a conversation with your dad about porn? Has he ever mentioned it, like what he thought of it in a pejorative way, or he just generally talked about it?
Because he wasn't in my life when I was in it. I mean,
but I'm talking about 2009, 2010.
Well, so I quit April 2009. But
porn still exists long after you quit. We all know that.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, we talked a little bit about how...
About his feelings about it.
I mean, he wasn't pleased. You know, he wasn't like, yes. But he loved me nonetheless. And so it wasn't what he wanted for me ever. And he acknowledged, when he found out from one of his coworkers.
Exactly what I was going to say, because you and I know, have a lot of mutual friends. What people in porn don't realize now with social media and technology, all the coworkers, once they find out that it's your daughter, it's brutal what happens to the family. Right?
Yeah.
I thought it was a way of discouraging gals getting into it because, I don't know if you can do that, but.
Well, but so Jenny, and then your dad got sick.
Yeah. So he got sick. He hadn't been feeling real great. And so last year, that was this year, Jenny. This year has been the longest, most full year of my entire life. So this year, he wasn't able to come to our baby shower, which we held on my 6-year sobriety anniversary. So January 21st, 6 years. And he couldn't come because he said he just wasn't feeling real good and he didn't think he could get on the train. And then the day after, we called him and he said that they had found a mass on his liver and his gallbladder, and he was pretty sure it was cancer. And I am a bit of a catastrophist myself. And so I was like, yep, it's cancer. This is it. He's fucking dying. And, And sure enough, he, the next week, was in the oncology unit, and I took Family Medical Leave Act from starting the 24th, and
provided you by the state of Washington.
School.
Okay. No, state of Washington.
Washington State. It's one of Washington State's laws. And
there are some good things about liberalism.
Well, I mean, it's not to say I actually got paid for that time. It just means I had a job when I came back.
Right. Which is good enough. That's good.
Yeah, I took the job. So so I took time off, and I went down to see him in the oncology unit. And 3 weeks after the diagnosis of primary liver cancer, he died. And it was actually, he died on February 13th of this year. And then on February 14th, Jeff and I went and spent Valentine's Day. And then on February 15th, I had a baby. And so it was a big fucking week. And
Jesus Christ. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the theater?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's when I found out that he was dying, you know, he got an attorney, an estate attorney, had her come into the oncology unit. All the kids, my brother and sister flew up, his family, like his brothers and sisters flew in. He said, you know, this is what's happening with this. This is where this money's going. You're getting this. He, in that week, gifted over $360,000. He's like, well, I can't take this money with me. And so then he just started giving gifts.
Nice.
Which blew me away. And he, the oncologist came in and said, you know, well, we can talk about treatments and what you can do and different options. And my dad said, no, I'm going to go to a hospice house and I'm going to die. And she said, well, you know, I can tell you about some options. And he goes, stop talking and tell me what you would do. If you had my diagnosis, what would you do? And she said, nothing.
Yeah,
and he said, we're good. And
I can't help ask some medical questions. I mean, primary liver cancer is unusual without hepatitis C. Did he have hepatitis C?
He didn't, but he had cirrhosis. And but we didn't know that he had cirrhosis because he never went to the doctor. Right. But I suspect he knew something was wrong. Yeah. I suspect he knew something was wrong.
Wow. What
That's
a year.
The world we live in.
And now it's, let's talk about your job. What are you doing now?
Yeah, I mean, because it wasn't a big enough year and I didn't make enough changes this year, I figured why not start a new job? Fuck it. So I had been working at a primary care clinic as their medical social worker, doing like brief interventions and stuff like that. And one of the things I often did was springboard people to mental health professionals that would see them for long-term mental health care. And my favorite type of person to work with in that setting was somebody who was highly anxious, because as somebody who vibrates a little bit faster than the average person and is highly anxious myself, I felt this kind of, you know, like alcoholics working with alcoholics. Mm-hmm. Like I feel this sort of kindred spirit thing working. Anyway, so I ended up hooking up with a private group practice. It's a real small boutique practice called Seattle Anxiety. And we are anxiety specialists, and we work not only with people with anxiety, but with the comorbid diagnoses that go along with anxiety.
OCDs and phobias.
Yep.
Dr. Drew could be the medical director there.
No. I could be a patient there. What are you talking about?
I was going to say that. But
do you do exposure therapy?
Yep. Yeah. So do exposure and ritual response prevention.
There's a really wonderful organization called the IOCD, International Obsessive Compulsive, IOCDF, I think they call themselves.
Yep. I'm a member, and I'm going to their conference this summer in Austin. Super excited.
So
about
I went,
it.
I spoke, I was the keynote at last year's conference, and I have.
Were you?
Yeah. And I've got to tell
as
you.
As a patient or as a
no,
doctor
I
expert?
No, I listen, I fully self-disclosed. I could have been a patient. It's fine. But it was one of the most extraordinary organizations I've ever been around. Wait till you see this conference. You will not believe your eyes. You'll get more involved with them. They are patient-focused in the fullest sense. Like every single thing you can want as a patient, they attempt to provide.
I love it. Incredible. Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm really excited for the OCD work that
I get.
Do
you walk through with people? Do you walk through their workplace? Do you walk through their going to school or what do you?
Oh yeah, we
field,
do it all.
Field stuff. See, that's. Well, that costs money. It's another thing that costs money that I wish we could adopt our healthcare system to not have to have these, like what you said, boutique means, you
expensive.
Know, not covered by HMO insurance.
Yeah.
You know,
though reimbursable.
I know that because I have a boutique rehab.
Right? Yeah.
So I wish that. That this, we just need a new healthcare system, Drew. We just need
I'm looking for Buffett and Bezos and all those guys. They're trying to develop something. I'm all interested in it, believe me.
That's exciting. You got a great opportunity up there.
But I cannot speak enough about the OCDF. You're going to love that. And did you have OCD stuff? You did have a little bit of that, didn't you? A little bit.
Yeah, I have some excoriation stuff. It's more like somatic. Related.
Well, no, you know what I remember. You know what I'm flashing on is that you really responded well to the stop and count stuff, and you'd be counting all the time. One, two, three. 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 You'd walk by Jane, she'd be like, one, two, three. One, two, three.
That's so funny. I forgot about that.
I had to.
Are you a doctor now? Are you a doctor?
No, psychotherapist.
Go be a doctor.
Well, you're an
MS. Two more years. 18 more months, Jenny.
MSW.
Yeah. 2 more years. I don't know what doctor programming you were thinking of. No, although USC does have a doctorate in social work program that I'm considering.
That's the one I'm talking about.
That USC social work school is very good. Or just get an LCSW. Just get a license.
Well, I'm a LSWAIC, so I'm an associate. I have just maybe like 30 more hours of supervision to be independent. So
then how long until after that you could supervise people? A year?
2 years.
So you might as well be a doctor. Come on, I'm challenging you right now.
We need
her to go from porn star to doctor.
No, this is. I want her to be fully actualized as who she is meant to be. That's all. Whatever letters come after her name are the ones that need to come after her name, right?
Yeah, I think once I start wanting to be a doctor for the right reasons, I will pursue that. As of now. Just wanting to be Dr. Jenny because I like the sound of it. Not a good reason.
That's really funny. All right, you can follow Jenny. I got up here is Jenny Ketchum.
But do the anxiety clinic again. Seattle Anxiety.
Is that
on there?
Mm-hmm.
Seattle
Twitter
Anxiety.
Twitter at Jenny Ketchum, Jennie. Instagram at Becoming Jenny, Jennie. And you have a website?
Yeah, so jennyketchum.com.
Okay. What's this?
And if you are in the state of Washington and you're in Seattle, love to see and work with you if you're having anxiety. And if you are in Washington and in a rural area or not able to get to Seattle but needing some anxiety specialist work, we do offer virtual appointments as well. So all about it being accessible.
Interesting.
There you go.
That's interesting. I need to hook you up with some of the IOCDF people too because you're going to be astonished. So
please, I would love that.
I'll work on that.
Cool. Thanks so much.
All right, Jenny. Great. Always it's the Jenny Ketchums of the world that get us up the next day.
Right.
Like it's easy to get up tomorrow after talking to you. So thank you.
Thanks, Drew. I appreciate your support over these years. And it means a lot to me, the door that you opened and that you are always there. Like I know that I can text you the day after Thanksgiving and you will respond within moments. And that just continues to blow my mind. So thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks for being you. And Bob, thank you for living in my old home and just being amazing.
Living in your old home?
Yeah, I took her apartment. We told that story.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's right.
I'll just do this so last thing. Dun, dun. The Law and Order thing. You don't remember that?
No.
Dun, dun.
Drew's got so many things in his head.
No, I remember. I remember Jenny's relationship with Law and Order.
Okay, so then I had her apartment, and I had her apartment. Right. I like Law and Order, and then every time it would do the beginning, I would go, oh my God, Jenny used to masturbate right here in this house.
No. That apartment was post addiction.
Oh, that was post Law and Order?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
All that
oh my God.
Weirdness
that
you did to yourself.
Weirdness.
Yeah, you didn't have to worry about it.
Didn't have to worry about that. plenty of other things to worry about.
That was Duncan. Was Duncan in that building?
Yeah,
too?
He lived in the building too. Yeah. Oh my God, we could have another episode about that, because I moved in after she moved out.
All right, next episode, we got to run.
Okay,
thanks,
next
Jenny.
Appreciate it, Jenny. Bye, right, guys. Bye-bye. Thank you so much.
Bye bye.
All
right, that's about it for this episode of This Life. Check us out at KBC 790 Midday Live Talk Radio Monday to Friday. You can also tune in every day live via the magic of the internet at kbc.com. If you miss it, we've made it simple for you to find all the shows at drdrew.com, the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, the Zing What I Do By Myself, the Dr. Drew podcast, This Life, of course, with Bob Swole Patrol, Mike Cantho, and his new health and fitness podcast. You can find us on Twitter at This Life Podcast, at Dr. Drew, D-R-E-W, at Rehab Bob Forrest, and of course, our lovely producer at First Lady of Love. I think I know who that is. If you love this show, please subscribe and tell a friend. We appreciate it when you do. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. Send us a message. Join the email list at drdrew.com, drdrew.com/contact. Also get a weekly email from us on that. While you're at it, at doctor.com, please support our sponsors by clicking through the banners. We only advertise products that I can get behind. So thank you for supporting them, those that support us. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.